Is there a global conspiracy? David Icke thinks so, and we're going live to the United Kingdom to talk with him next on Coast to Coast AM. Worldwide author David Icke has written 16 books, traveled to more than 40 countries since 1990, researching, exposing the Big Brother dictatorship predicted by George Orwell in his book, 1984. He charts the history of the Illuminati. His latest work, The David Icke Guide to Global Conspiracy and How to End It. David Icke, here he is. Hey, David, welcome back.
Hello, George. Good morning, mate.
Way too long. How have you been?
Good,
and you're okay, because you know what? I've been getting emails over the last year or so from people saying, talk to David, check with him, make sure he's okay. So I'm doing that first. Are you okay?
Yeah, I mean, I've had many challenges over the years and recent years because, funnily enough, there are forces that don't want me to that put this out, and it's being communicated more and more successfully. The interest in my work is now kind of phenomenal compared with what it was, 20 years ago. And people are now waking up, not just I think this might happen. People are waking up now because of daily experience. You turn on the news and you see so many things that were in my books years ago that are now happening. And in fact, there was a television program on even mainstream television in Britain called David Icke, Was He Right? Which was based on the fact that things that were happening in the world, particularly since 9/11, were in my books years ago. So people are beginning to wake up on an increasingly vast scale. And it's also testament to the fact, George, you know, that if you keep speaking your truth, and your truth has got any validity, then eventually people will see it. And it's vital that people keep doing that rather than walking away or keeping their heads down because they get resistance or criticism.
Well, you're hugely controversial, David, to sometimes attacked, but your views are important because this audience needs to hear different perspectives as they make up their own minds on what's going on. The problem is you are right in many cases as you begin to see this unfold. I always wondered, ever since we first talked, what would take them so long to try to shut you down? Because as you got bigger and bigger and bigger, and more people began to read your work and witness your work at the various places that you go, it's only a matter of time before they try to start squashing people.
Yeah, but I'll tell you now, George, they ain't going to squash me. You know, it's a matter of sense of reality. And over the years, when I first started traveling around America talking about this from about 96, I met so many people, whistleblowers and researchers and people who were trying to get this information out, who were doing it in fear of the consequences. And when you are in fear to the point where you are certain that something's going to come along to stop you, then there's a very great chance you're going to actually attract that to you.
Now, the non-controversial part of me wanted to say, because you're a former professional soccer player, maybe we'll just sit back and talk about David Beckham. But nah, can't do that.
let's not talk about David Beckham. The other thing about your question, though, George, is when I first started talking publicly, not just about this, but about the fact that this reality is not what we think it is in the early 1990s, I went through the most incredible public ridicule in Britain, to the point where I couldn't walk down any street without being laughed at. A comedian on the television only had to say my name, no joke necessary, and they got a laugh. Now, that, with hindsight, because I've looked of my life, as you were in part of the introduction. And I can see now the links in the chain that have all been necessary while they were not understandable in the experiencing of them, while they did not seem to be certainly positive or have any good reason. I can see now why they were all connected. And one great benefit, there were a number of them, funnily enough, one great benefit of this enormous ridicule that I went through was that when I started talking about this stuff, I'm sure the manipulators were very happy about it. Well, if this guy's talking about it, well, crikey, everyone thinks he's a nutter.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
That's good.
Yeah.
But they forget, and they've forgotten something that I've been talking about all over the years, when people said, why do you keep going when people just ridicule you? And the answer was this: you can't unhear something. And if you keep putting it out and it's got any validity, eventually what you say is going to be shown to be true, and then people will look at you in a different light. Now, that's exactly what's happened. But as it's happening, I'm now up to a very fast pace. I've got all these books, including the new one, with all this information in them. And now it's a very different proposition to stop me than it would have been earlier on the road. But at that time, they saw no reason to stop me for the reasons I've just talked about. So I'm now at a time where I feel just that this is the cusp of enormous change and enormous mass understanding of what's going on. And these next few years, you mentioned in your introduction earlier how glad you are to be alive at this time. Well, so am I, because we are going to see terrific challenges and also terrific change. And in the end, it's going to be a positive change, because humanity is going to wake up from its amnesic state, and it's going to remember who it is, where it is, and the true nature of what it is, which is infinite genius consciousness.
I remember reading George Orwell's 1984, thinking at the time, and I was a pretty young age then, how bizarre it was, how preposterous it could be. And I kept saying to myself, this will never happen. As we got through 1984, which seemed like an eternity when I was a young kid, it now is even beyond that, David. It is more frightening. It is more controlling. It is more manipulation. And you're right. I think in the long run, we'll win. But man, on our way to get there, it's going to be pretty rough.
Yes, it is. And it's gathering all the time. A very appropriate title, as you quite rightly say there, would be a book called Beyond 1984, because this is going further than that now, and the plans they have go further than that. And of course, George Orwell, real name Eric Blair, you know, he wasn't some guy who was outside of the system. He went to Eton College. I mean, he mixed with these aristocratic and so-called elite bloodlines, and he was very, very heavily involved in politics, and he was involved with the BBC during the war and stuff, when it became a propaganda, well, it still is, but I mean, it became a real propaganda operation during the war. And so he had access to a hell of a lot of information. And I, as I've said in previous books, there's no way that the whole of 1984, that book, came from his imagination. And because the way he has hit the whole theme of what's happening now is beyond coincidence. And incidentally, when I was researching this new book, I found that, Huxley, Brave New World, looked at the mind control future.
Exactly. And how about Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451?
Yeah. But Huxley was a tutor of George Orwell at Eton. For one or two terms. And that's kind of appropriate, because if you put 1984 together with Brave New World, you're pretty close to what's happening today. And we are now in a time, we're at a fork in the road, where we can go on the way we have been, believing what people tell us, believing what the authorities tell us, believing what the mainstream media tell us, which is merely what the system tells them to tell us. Or we can take another route at this fork in the road and start to wake up to the true magnitude of who we are and the true nature of reality and how we create it, and therefore how we can be manipulated to create a reality that suits those that wish to suppress us. That's the fork in the road, and a lot of people are going down the route to awakening now, and it's fantastic, fantastic time. But as you say, quite rightly, immensely challenging, because the more people awaken, the more the system, and we're seeing it every day, is trying to screw the lid down. And I mean, I'm sure in this chat we can go into some detail about how they do it. But
sure.
One of the key ways, the way I open up this book is 600 pages, nearly 300 illustrations.
Well, it's almost as big as the book of Urantia.
Yeah, it's 28 chapters, or actually I don't call them chapters, I call them dots, 28 dots, because this is all about dot connecting. It's about connecting people, situations, subjects that are organizations that are not on the face of it in any way connected, but my goodness me, when you connect them, also that's what's going on. Oh, it's obvious now, and it is once the dots are connected. And I open up with two chapters which are fundamental to understanding the nature of what's going on. One is who are we, and the second one is where are we? Because until we understand the nature of who we are and the nature of the reality we're experiencing, we cannot understand how we're manipulated on a daily basis. I'll give you an example. It's very, very clear. I've been going on about this for years now, and it's becoming clearer the more my research goes on, that the human body is a biological computer, in mm-hmm. effect. It's all the computer analogies boxes are ticked when you look at how the body works. But it's not like a desktop computer where it's data in, output out. It's a biological computer in the sense that it has the ability not just to process data on the basis of input, but to assess it and make decisions
yes,
on that data.
Yes, exactly.
And as a result of that, we can get caught, and the vast majority of people on this planet have, with a false identity. And that identity is that what we look at as we stare in the mirror is who we are. We are Eric Jones, we are Ethel Smith, that's who we are. No, that's what we are experiencing. This is a vehicle for experiencing this reality. Because we are consciousness, which is vibrating to a much faster frequency than this physical world that we wish to interact with, we need an outer shell that's vibrating within the frequency range of this reality so we can interact with it, so I can pick a book up or interact in daily life. But what they've done, what the manipulators have done, and they do it brilliantly, is they've got us to identify who we are with the vehicle and not with the infinite consciousness that we are. And so we operate on a fraction of our multidimensional infinite genius, and experience the world overwhelmingly only through the five senses, which is the computer consciousness, as I call it, body consciousness. Now, if you can destabilize that computer so that consciousness cannot manifest its true potential through it, analogy is as simple as a brilliant computer programmer who's sitting at a computer that's not working properly, I don't care how brilliant he is, he's not going to get his genius through that computer, because the computer's not going to react to his input in the way that it should.
Right.
And this computer, the body computer, is being bombarded with chemical and electromagnetic attacks, not least through the chemicals in food and drink. And so when you start to understand that what we call thought and emotion is also overwhelmingly a body consciousness, a body computer phenomenon, and it's an electrochemical phenomenon, it becomes no surprise anymore why, in the period since this unbelievable mass of chemical cocktails have been put into food and drink, particularly for the young, that the behavior of young people has suddenly started to be an issue. What's happening to the young? Why are they? It's a massive issue in Britain. It's talked about constantly. Why? Because our young people are being poisoned. They are being chemically poisoned, and emotion and thought is an electrochemical process, at least at the body level. And so even the way they think and feel emotionally is being destabilized by this rubbish that we put in food, and it's not by accident.
It's not by accident. And, you know, even all these toys and things we're getting from China, David, that are lead-based, I'm not sure that's an accident.
One of the few things that Franklin Roosevelt said that I would agree with was that when he said worst the effective, if it happens in politics, it's because it's meant to happen. And there's so much. This is why I put this book together and why it is so comprehensive. It's when you start to realize where all this coordination is coming from and the network that's doing it, you start to then see why, for instance, the same legislation is being passed in New Zealand, that is being passed in Germany, that's being passed in the United States, that's being passed in Britain, some of it almost word for word. It's because there is this central coordinating force which is has this global agenda. And as you rightly say, even down to, I mean, this is one of the things, even me as a researcher over this last 20 years full time, George, even I've been surprised at the detail in which this conspiracy goes. And, look at what we put in tooth fillings, mercury tooth fillings. We have been putting this stuff into children and adult teeth all these years. And when I had mine taken out...
I did too. All of them. They're gone.
Well, I don't know what your experience was, George, but mine, when I had my mercury fillings taken out, the dentist and the dental assistant, they were dressed like something out of outer space.
Exactly.
And he showed me this long list of things they had to do to conform to government guidelines in how to get rid of the stuff. And I'm thinking, it's been in my gob since I was a kid, you know? And we had a lady over here about 2 or 3 years ago. It was all in the media. And she had been in clinical depression, and she went into clinical depression almost spontaneously 40 years earlier. She'd been in and out of institutions. Nothing could be done for her until 40 years later, someone said to her, can you think of anything that you did or happened about the time all this started? And she said, well, the only thing I could think of, she said, I had 19 tooth fillings. So it was pointed out to her that maybe she should have those taken out and go on a mercury detox, which she did. And the depression of 40 years, institutionalized depression, just disappeared as fast as it came. And so that's just one example of how our behavior, our sense of joy, our sense of love of life is being suppressed, and we're being suppressed emotionally on many levels by the stuff that we're being given to eat. And of course, GM food, genetically modified food, that's designed to genetically modify us, and it comes from Monsanto, which is one of the greatest Illuminati operations on planet Earth.
David, when we come back from the break, let's go way back to the beginning where this was concocted, where it was planned. And when you say in the beginning when you were ridiculed, we've got about a minute here left, was it because of your reptilian agenda theory? Is that why they started?
No, that came later. I mean, that was the second stage of ridicule. I do ridicule, George. The first time was when I started talking about the fact that, the world was not like it was, and I was not just David Icke. I was more than that. And indeed, not just me, everybody.
What's up is down. What's down is up, David.
Yep.
All right, well, stay with us. David Icke, we're talking with him about his new work, The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy. And if you don't think there's a global conspiracy, well, after you listen to David Icke tonight on Coast to Coast, you will be shaking your head and saying, you know what? I think it may be. If you want to send me an email, it's george@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment as we go live again to London in that area with David Icke. And our very special guest tonight, David Icke. We'll be back with David in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. David, how far back do we have to go to begin to think about the agenda, the globalist agenda, the plan to just control all of us?
Well, it's at least thousands of years, and probably a lot more than that, because if someone says to me, how deep does the rabbit hole go? Well, I don't know. I'm just going down it, and I've got to a certain point, but the end is nowhere in sight, because, you know, I talk about the way we are manipulated on a five-sense level through this network of interbreeding bloodlines and their secret society network. I've talked about how that network of bloodlines is ultimately controlled by interdimensional non-human entities, but you go beyond them. Who controls them? It's like the rabbit hole. You just keep going, and eventually it will be a form of consciousness that is holding this whole thing together. But in terms of where I've got so far, you can go back to a time when there was a global society of great advancement. Of course, native accounts and myths and stories describe this no matter what culture you go into. And then there was this enormous cataclysm of geological events which brought an end to that, what they called Golden Age, and that global society was split up into isolated groups. Now, these isolated groups originally had that that knowledge of reality and the vibrational state of reality, and how you can manipulate it, how you can use it, how you can read it. And so when you go around the world, you find in some parts of the world, they still continue with the runestones, throwing the runestones with the symbols on, which are energetic symbols which can be read by people that know what they're talking about to read energy fields. In another part of the world, in fact, all over the world now, you've got tarot cards, which have come through the ages. That's another way of the, another expression of this original knowledge, mm-hmm. Of how to read energy. And in Africa, they throw the bones. I've had this done for me by a Zulu shaman called Credo Mutwa. And these bones are carved into certain symbols, and they throw the bones. And again, just like they throw the runestones with symbols on them. It's all the same knowledge, but it's taken a different route. And all over the world. So when this global society broke down, the world became isolated, and that's basically where official history picks it up, in places like Sumer, in what is now Iraq, which they call the cradle of civilization, and other parts of the world. But this was not the start of civilization. It was the restarting after recovering from these great cataclysmic events. Now, alongside this, in all the ancient cultures, you find this recurring theme, George, of an interbreeding between humans and a non-human race, creating hybrid bloodlines. And these hybrid bloodlines were the demigods. They were the middle people between the gods, as they were perceived.
Yes.
Non-human entities, which we would call extraterrestrials, I prefer to call them interdimensionals, and humans. And it was these bloodlines that became the royal bloodlines of the ancient world, all over the world, where they claimed the right to rule, which became eventually the so-called divine right to rule, which was just another expression of this original, I have the right to rule because I have the genetics of the gods. And these bloodlines have been expanding their power and influence and control through the centuries.
Through the entire planet, David, right?
Because what they've done now, what's happening now, George, is they've expanded into another global society. We are now in the first global society since the original one vast eons ago. And what has happened is that there are certain parts of the world, in the ancient world, where these bloodlines really centered themselves. And one of them was ancient Sumer in what is now Iraq. And then later, in the same land between two rivers, Mesopotamia, the Tigris and the Euphrates, in what became known as Babylon and the Babylonian Empire. So I would say, just as a quick aside here, George, But absolutely, it is no accident about the invasion of Iraq at this time. Yes, on one level, it might be about oil, and that's a benefit and the control of oil and all that stuff. But that's only one level. Another level, much more important to these people, is this has enormous historic significance to them. This land, because it's ancient Sumer and it's ancient Babylon, where these bloodlines overwhelmingly came out of. They then relocated, as I detail all this in the book, because it's a chronological story. They then relocated eventually in Rome, where they were behind the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire then expanded into Northern Europe, mm-hmm. and there was interbreeding again between these hybrid bloodlines with the aristocracy of Northern Europe and then eventually the aristocracy and royal families of Northern Europe were these bloodlines that were interbred into these hybrid bloodlines, and then through the great European empires, particularly the British Empire, but the French and others too, these bloodlines basically took the world over in terms of their colonization of the world. But there's two forms of control. One is a control you can see, like fascism or communism,
yes.
Apartheid, a dictatorship you can see. And that has a finite life, because at least the people under that dictatorship know they're under a dictatorship. They know they're in a state of control. The greatest form of dictatorship is a prison cell where you can't see the bars, where you are told you are free, and you think you are free up to a point, because people who think they're free don't rebel about the fact that they're not.
Until you bounce into that imaginary bar, you realize you can't go much farther than where you were.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like you're free as long as you don't want to go past this point.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize you're not. And what happened with so-called, giving freedom to the former colonies, like the United States, was that as apparently on the surface, these European powers withdrew. And when I'm talking about the European powers, the countries, it's not the prime ministers or the leaders that are in control. It's the secret society network controlled by what I call the shadow people that people never see. They're the ones that control the people who are apparently in power. I mean, you know, your prime minister comes for 5 years or 10 years, president comes for 4 years or 8 years, and then they're gone and someone else comes in.
The ones we think we elect, they're not really in power.
Elect, which, of course, with George Bush, we clearly have not. But the thing is that these people come and go, but they're just front people. The real power is always in power. As someone brilliantly said, it doesn't matter who you vote for, the government still gets in. Well, the secret force behind government gets in. So what happened was that when these colonial powers withdrew on the surface, they left out in these countries, including the United States, the bloodline network and the secret society network, which manipulates that bloodline network and its gophers and front people into positions of power and authority. And it has gone on controlling those countries ever since. And the United States has been set up as a fall guy. It's been set up to take the rap for advancing the agenda of global control. Because although the bullets are fired out of America symbolically,
mm-hmm.
the gun is loaded in the center of the secret society network in Europe, in places like Rome and London. And these key centers of this secret society network, because the Church of Rome is actually the Church of Babylon relocated. Because when the bloodlines relocated eventually from Babylon to Rome, they took with them the religion of Babylon. And if this is why, and there's been a lot of documentation of this now in recent years, this is why when you look at the holy days of the Roman Church, you look at the symbolism, you look at the basic stories, they are a mirror of what was said in Babylon thousands of years earlier, because it's Babylon relocated. And, it's controversial, but I've known to be, but Roman Church is not about, love and God and all this stuff. It's actually a major, major center of this whole spider's web of secret societies that are manipulating behind the scenes, and it's like an iceberg. The real stuff's going on under the surface, and what we see are the George Bushes and the Tony Blairs and the Gordon Browns and all this stuff.
Sure.
But they're just the people we see that are playing it out in the public arena. The real power is underneath, and that's what we need to uncover.
What do they want, David? What do they want with us?
Well, there's multi levels to this, George, and I go into all of them that I can in the book, which is why it's so comprehensive. And it depends what level you want it.
So it's different facets they want from us.
If you want to look at the five sense level of it, these people, these hybrid bloodlines, which I think the Bible refers to as the Nephilim. That's one name, but they have different names in different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
In South Africa, they're known as the Chitahuri, the children of the serpent, or the children of the python. At the five sense level, these people have, if you like, their body computers. They do not have empathy. They do not have the ability to empathize with the consequences for others of their actions. This is why they can slaughter vast numbers of people. And to us, we have a fail-safe mechanism called empathy with the consequences for others
right.
of our actions.
We have a conscience.
Well, that's another way of putting it. Absolutely, George, right. Yeah, that's another way of putting it. And these people do not. And this is why I've been saying all these years, don't judge what these people would do by what you would do, because it's not the same process of perception that you have. And so you have a situation where, like, 3,000 people on 9/11, well, and so what? You know, whereas everyone else is horrified, to them it's nothing. And this means that all bets are off. There are no limits. There are no emotional, if you like, or empathetic limits that they have. And as a result, they are operating to an agenda with a motivation and with an attitude that the rest of the population couldn't really comprehend.
And, you know, David, I grew up during the Cold War in the 60s, 10, 11, 12 years old, truly not really understanding what was going on, other than knowing that there was a form of fear that I could sense from my parents. You know, when they would let us do this fallout shelter routine in schools, and we had to huddle down and, you know, put our head between our legs. And I knew there was something going on here. Jump ahead to today. I have never seen this planet discuss the possibilities of nuclear war than ever before. Beyond the 60s, here Putin is saying we're going to get ready because no one's going to muscle us. We're talking about the possibility of an armed Iran or what could happen there. Pakistan now. I have never seen them let us know that there's going to be some kind of nuclear holocaust. It's almost as if they've written it out, they're going to do it, and they want to say, we told you so.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the other key things that people that haven't looked at this need to appreciate is forget borders, okay? Forget borders. They're for public consumption. These bloodlines operate in Russia. They operate in China massively. I mean, the ancient Chinese emperors used to claim the right to be emperor because of their genetic connection to the serpent gods and these non-human entities that did this interbreeding and continue to do it, I would say, overwhelmingly are described, not always and only, but overwhelmingly described in reptilian terms, which has fundamental implications for their attitude, because if you look at the reptilian brain, the R complex that scientists call it, which is the oldest part of the human brain, comes from our reptilian genetics, the character traits of the reptilian brain in the human brain are exactly the character traits of these Illuminati elite hybrid bloodlines.
They have no heart, do they?
No empathy. Cold-blooded behavior, no empathy with the victims of their actions, an obsession with might is right, an obsession with acquisition of wealth of control.
And more and more. They need more and more, don't they? They feed off it.
Going back to an earlier question, George, they don't know what enough is. It doesn't exist in their reality. And this comes around to something very, very important, I think. I read an article, funny enough, in the L.A. Times years ago by an anthropologist who was talking about the cult of excess, as he called it, in California. I think dinner plates in restaurants had just gone to a bigger size or something. I think that was the point of the article. And he was saying this acquisition of more and more, vastly beyond enough, he said, was a trait of the reptilian brain, in the human brain, the R complex, because he said the reptilian brain associates having far, far more than enough with a greater chance of survival, because the reptilian brain is all about survival. You know where we have this reaction to danger? It's called fight or flight. We
right.
hit the guy or run. That comes from the reptilian brain. Now, the reptilian brain is a very good part within the whole, because it is our survival.
Sure, it's necessary. Yeah.
Now, imagine if you have a far greater reptilian genetics than the rest of the population,
right.
you are going to exhibit much more extreme expressions of the reptilian brain characteristics and reptilian genetic characteristics than the rest of the population. It's exactly what these two people do. And one of the things they are utterly obsessed with is survival. Everything is about survival, survival, survival. And so they want, on one level, there are many more levels to this, but it is overwhelmingly about survival. These people, George, that are manipulating us are terrified themselves, and much of what they do comes from being this having this obsession with surviving. Now, if survival is the area that they operate on, and that's the reptilian genetics, the more you can manipulate the human population into a state of a mental state of obsession with survival, fear of not surviving, you are locking them in to that level of perception that connects into the level of perception that you're in. In other words, you have the potential of creating a hive mind. And you're quite right when you mentioned a few minutes ago, George, about all these reasons to be frightened, a nuclear war and this and Iran and all this stuff. We are being given so many reasons daily on a global scale now to be frightened of not surviving. And what that does is lock us into this reptilian genetics, which is all about survival. And, you know, what we need to, and again, going back to body consciousness or infinite consciousness, body consciousness is obsessed with surviving because it has a, or can be, because it has a sense of finiteness. Oh, I die in 70 years or whatever.
Right.
Whereas when you come from the perspective of being infinite consciousness and not Chuck Jones or Ethel Smith, you don't even consider survival as a situation or a problem, because you know that infinite consciousness cannot do anything but survive. It's a different point of observation. So once you become conscious and you start to self-identify with being infinite consciousness, eternal consciousness, rather than a finite body, then you move out of this realm of survival mentality, which is what these people want to lock us into. And that's another reason why it's important to become conscious, because we move out of their realm of operation.
Stay with us, David Icke. Lots more to talk about. David's website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Absolutely frightening and very, very riveting.